Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN in association with Betfred. Week 14 moving in to view. Two terrific guests coming your way to get you set. Check this out. NFL UK royalty in the house. Hey, forget NFL UK. NFL royalty in the house. OCU Manura. Is he the one? Is he the two-time Super Bowl winner? Making his season's debut. Looking forward to catching up with us. And if that wasn't good enough, Ben Isaacs, our resident college expert, always bringing some NFL intel as well. It's going to rattle through some of the other key games that OC and I don't get to, which frankly, given all the different things I want to talk to OC about, will be most of them. So let's get straight down to business and welcome the terrific, the fantastic OCU Manura. Well, you know, I remember, so we did the Super Bowl together on Channel 4. That's the first time we met. And I remember about a year later, me and Mike Carlson were in some BBC radio studio somewhere. And when we came in, like half an hour before broadcast, and they said, oh, OCU Manura is going to be a guest. And I was like, oh, brilliant, man. OCU, we haven't seen him since the Super Bowl. And introduced you to this massive hype buildup. And there was this brilliant pause. You just gave it a little beat. Yeah, just a little bit. And then I just heard this, well, which is the coolest intro ever. I love it. How are you doing?
Oh, so good. I'm so good, man. What is going on now? How are you? Man, I miss you, man.
Oh, you back.
Hey, listen, I miss you.
First things first, before we talk any kind of football, we're going to talk some football. We're going to talk a lot of OC. But most importantly, five aside, man, because we are both obsessed.
I know.
It's all we really talk about whenever we get together. So you're back playing. Presumably you're back playing, right? And you get some games.
Let me be honest with you, okay? I'm going to be honest with you right now, Nat, okay? I actually played today. Uh-huh. And this is what happened. This is what held me up for a little bit. Because the traffic coming back was so heavy that I was like, oh my god, let me make sure I'm good with Nat.
I
sent you that message. It's
it's fine with me, bad. But to be delayed for something on the basis it's something important, matter of life and death, like five aside. We both love. I played last night, man, and I tell you, it's the first. Actually, no, I played. I tell a lie. I played Sunday, and then last night, the first two games back since lockdown. It feels good to be back.
It's incredible. It really is. Feels good.
Do you, when you're playing five or seven, playing football, does it bring back a lot of memories of playing football? And you know, does it kind of stir up stuff?
Well, no, not really. I think sometimes it gets competitive, and then you know that part of me comes out. But ordinarily, it's. I don't know how to explain. I wouldn't say it's such a different sport. You know what I mean? It's like a completely different sport. And so the only thing that I would say happens is my competitive juices start to flow a little bit. But then as far as like bringing back what I used to do, nah, not at all.
That sounds terrifying.
Sometimes, right? Sometimes when I look back at my playing career, it's almost as if it was somebody else who did it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's...
That is interesting.
It's so far. Yeah. I can't believe that that's what I used to do for a living sometimes.
Is it because it's been a while since you did it? Is it because you were young? Both of those things?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. It's been like 5 years since I retired.
Yeah.
And, you know, as soon as I retired, I jumped straight into doing something else. And so now my life seems like it's more this than that, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. So this, let's incidentally, the idea of you playing five aside, and you know, sometimes I get a bit competitive. The mind boggles as to where that's going. But let's talk about broadcasting, because I mentioned that the Super Bowl we did, right? So this was to give everybody you know, context on this. So we were doing at the BT Sports Studios, which of course where the BBC show is made, right? And we were doing the Super Bowl. You rocked in 15 minutes before broadcast, I think, kind of sat down. You were like kind of sizing it up. Like, we knew you didn't know us.
And right.
It was interesting because within, I reckon, a couple of minutes of that broadcast, I thought to myself, you were completely at ease and in the zone, right? Which I wouldn't say it surprised me, but I never worked with you. I didn't know, and I didn't know how much stuff you'd done. And so it's no surprise to me at all how you've knocked broadcasting out of the park. But was that, had you done stuff before that show?
No, never.
First thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I came out in 2008 when I got injured. I came to London. I think it was Tampa Bay was playing New England, and I was in the studio for that. But that was my first time, working like that. So this was very, very new to me for sure.
When did you start thinking about wanting to broadcast?
This is going to surprise you, but never. That
Never
it was
did.
never really like, nah, it wasn't really like my intention. I think when I first, retired, I'd been telling Mark Waller and, Alistair, who were in charge of NFL UK at that time. I was like, I want to come out. I want to come to London. I want to come help. And so as soon as I retired, they brought me out to London. And oddly enough, there was no TV show. There was nothing. So I was going to the office every day, just trying to grow the game and, come up with different various ideas. And then midway through the season, they were like, we're going to start doing a TV show and put that on BBC. And then that's how that started. So I didn't come out with a, initial thought of, oh, I'm going to be a broadcaster. It just kind of fell into my lap.
Yeah, that's interesting. And your style, because we've done a lot of live stuff together and a fair few of the highlight shows. And what I found really interesting, again, working with you early on, and everyone likes to work in slightly different ways, and some people like to know everything that is coming, and other people less so. And very much with the live stuff, you're like, just I don't want to know, just hit me. And very much in the instant, in the moment, you're kind of reacting really, really instinctively, which is interesting. Because again, just kind of juxtaposing that with what you used to do and how you used to play, was that the set? I mean, how similar and how different was that to play?
Completely different that because like as a football player I was a pretty good athlete I would say, but there were people who were more athletic than me. So in order for me to become successful, it was a lot of thinking. So it was a lot of planning, a lot of film watching, a lot of practice over and over and over again. I was like very repetitive in football. But then what I found was in the broadcasting world, it was almost as if I should do the complete opposite, because I just wanted to be more free and more myself. And I was in complete trust of my mind. I was like, okay, I know the way my mind works. I know the way I think. I don't want to seem scripted. I want everything to be almost like really, really genuine. And so that's why, like when we work together, I'm like, no, I don't want to know. I want to be able to just react off of you. And then also that also works well with people who like yourself, who can, you have to be able to work well together. So you know how I am, I know how you are, and we just flow like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, man, it is, and it's stunning as well. Just whatever medium it is, you see people that just do it and bam, and they're away. And that being natural, I think, is maybe the single most important thing with broadcasting. It's the single most important thing, and you nail that. Other stuff that in terms of how you've developed that, when I dropped by earlier this year and did a few shows with you, you and J Bell were doing some really interesting stuff. And my favorite thing was something that never made it to air, which was our presidential debate.
Oh yeah. That
Which I'm so gutted that never made it to air. So it's basically you and J Bell, you doing your best Trump and me moderating it. Crooked Nat, I think you
Crooked Matt.
Crooked Nat.
Crooked Matt.
Gutted that never made it, man. That was awesome. But you did some really that was a lot of fun, but you've done some really serious stuff as well, and there was one thing you guys did, and you did it, and it's I want to point this out because I think a lot of our listeners will know that will watch the show and have seen it. You did it in one take, and it was, and I said it to you afterwards, it's one of the genuinely one of the best things I've ever seen, right? Let alone in this, in a sports show on a Saturday night to tackle a subject you're talking about. Homosexuality, gay players in the NFL, and the fact that it is still completely prohibitive for players to come out. And tackling that subject in the way you did in one take, I thought was brilliant. Is that something that you want to do more of? That type of content?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. I think it's important that you're able to talk about it, but then also that is very tricky, because if you say the wrong thing, it could go really, really wrong and really bad. So a lot of people are rightfully afraid of discussing that. But like for me, I put a lot of thought into things like that. Like I really do. Like I put a lot of thought into it, and then I trust the way I think, and I know that I would never offend anybody, like willfully, like never. And, you know, you try to understand where everybody's coming from. And then when you speak, you're able to speak clearly and, you know, from the heart, if you've really put like real thought into it, as opposed to just, oh, they ask you a question, you just, you know, shoot out the first thing that comes out of your mouth. I only do stuff like that when it comes to like football questions.
Yes.
But like real questions, like what we were discussing then. No, I think through all of that.
And do you take it around with you? Because we've talked a bit of comedy as well, you know, in the past, right? And back when I was when I was doing stand up, but actually, I guess even now with the writing I do, so you know, the column I write for the Times, I'll have a notebook and I'll write little ideas and I'll be carrying around in my head and I'll be thinking about these things for a while before I come down to the blank bit of paper and then I get on with it. Do you do it the same way?
100%. And I carry all those things around in my head. And then you find that sometimes somebody will say something and you'll be able to relate to one of those things that you thought like immediately and it just comes out. But it's not a lot of it is not you just saying something to me and I'm just saying, well, no, like I've thought through 1,000 different things. And then you say something that sparks, you know, one of those things that I'd already thought and then.
And it rolls out. Yeah, exactly. So you and Jay Bell are doing the, I saw the Overtime show, right? So Overtime. So you're kind of taking on kind of with your pod, rolling that as a separate strand. So taking that away from football a bit and starting to talk about bigger picture stuff. So that's, I guess, the first or the next step into that space.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we're going to keep on doing things like that. Jason is very talented also.
Big time.
You know, and he has a way of, you know, talking and getting this point across. So we thought, okay, we know the type of conversations that we have. You've been in there with us. You know the type of conversations that we have. It's not just, oh, Patrick Mahomes is a, you know, Patrick Mahomes is a great quarterback.
He's a good player.
We're having real conversations.
Yeah.
And so when you're in that environment and you see the way each other thinks, you know, I think it only makes sense to try to, you know, discuss that other things than football.
Yeah, big time. God, the energy between you two is just, as you said earlier, things just click and you can't fake that, you know, it just happens. But you can nurture and develop it though, right?
Yeah, you can. I want to say something. I remember the first time you told us that you were you used to do stand-up.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, because we'll be in studio, right? Like we'll be working on the games and you would say things and you would do things. I'm like, man, that is so funny. But I didn't know that you already had like this is what you were doing for a living.
Yeah.
So when you told me you were like, I did stand up, I was like, it makes sense to me, man, because you're funny as hell, man.
We never had that conversation. I guess it's odd as well, because, you know, I mean, it depends on the show I'm doing and, you know, you kind of change that up a little bit. It's interesting what you said about that feels like a different life when you were playing. Stand up for me does it. And I, to put this in context, right? You know, you are a two-time Super Bowl winner, right?
Twice.
I kind of, I guess the parallel with stand up for me is probably playing a kind of high college level. That's kind of, so I started out like every stand up does on the open mic circuit, you know, and in front of, you know, 8 people in pubs and you kind of build up I got signed quite early on. Right. So I kind of got traction quite early on and got signed to a, you know, a big agent and started doing TV and radio and big, you know, 20 minute spots around the country or 20 minute spots at big clubs. And so I got to a certain level where I was pro and I reached a real crossroads in my life. And then I kind of backed away from it. So it's kind of like, I look back on it. It's been fundamental for what I've gone on to do. I learned so much and I loved it. I loved a lot of it, but at the same time, I always, there's a slight asterisk for me. Like I kind of stopped then after 4 or 5 years. And even though that was a fast track 4 or 5 years, if I'd gone on for another, you know, 10, 15 years, and that was kind of really what I did. And I was doing hour long shows and, you know, really focused, but I didn't have the passion for it in the way that you need. You need to live and breathe it. And I liked it.
It's tough, right? It's tough, isn't it?
It is tough. But you know, I guess there are parallels with, and it's, I suppose, in asking you about the broadcasting versus the football and the feeling you have inside, if you can, because a lot of athletes say they can never recapture that feeling when they're playing. And I don't know if whether stand up is the same, that are probably not for me, but there are certainly moments where it came close, where you'd play. And hey, there were a lot of times when I died on my ass, I could tell you about too many to mention. But there were times when you just hit the right room at the right time. And often when you least expect it, and you just kind of walk off stage and you're walking on air and there's nothing. But yeah, that was, yeah. And seminal part of my life. But just like you said, I look at it now and think it feels like a very different me. Very different me. Now, hey, listen, we're going to talk a little bit of football, because this is technically a football show, although we haven't concentrated a huge amount. There are just a couple of games I want to pick on in particular. I want to start with your Giants, actually. Can we start with your Giants, Cardinals, Giants?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want to do X's and O's here, but I want to ask you on a few things. Joe Judge in particular, because he is, I like Joe Judge, OC. I like what I see with Joe Judge. And on this show, we often talk about head coaches that we would least like to be going into the locker room at halftime losing.
Yep.
Because, and like Vrabel is on that list, right? For sure.
Yeah.
Joe Judge is on that list, right? He looks like he is fearsome, and he's got his players playing for him.
He's tough, old school football coach. You know, a lot of times, especially recently, it's the young, it's the hot, the offensive coordinator. He's looking sexy, man. He's just, you know, but you know, sometimes you need like more of a backbone, and that's exactly what the New York Giants went after. And this guy has a very high strength of character, very strong individual. And for me, even when they were losing games, the thing I kept on noticing, I was like, man, they're playing hard. This isn't a tremendously talented football team. They are playing hard. Mm. And when things aren't going so well and you see a team continuously fight and play hard, then you know that they have the full support of, you know, the locker room, the coach does. I mean, because once you start losing in the NFL, man, things go really, really bad, really, really quick.
Yeah, there's a great quote by Hemingway, where a character in a Hemingway book, he says, "How did you go broke?" And he said, "Gradually, then suddenly." So what?
Exactly.
What are we thinking with the Giants? So they, I mean, it's they're in a fight with Washington. Realistically, count Philly and Dallas out, right? I mean, they could be in the playoffs. They're in there. They're in the fourth seed right now.
Yeah, which is, frankly, that is incredible.
Right.
But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. It's not their fault that the NFC East wasn't particularly good.
Yeah.
I think they're a good football team. They're a solid football team. I think they're really about a year or two away from being, like, seriously strong contenders.
Mm.
I feel like they need to, you know, accrue just a couple of more, you know, pieces, just a little bit more talent on that football team, and I think they'd be good to go. The coaching staff is outstanding. The defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham, outstanding. Mm. They have some really good football players, especially in the secondary. I know they've been getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback, but I feel like the secondary is the real strength of this football team, and they are shutting receivers down completely. Mm. And allowing the defensive line to at least get home a little bit. They're a good football team.
Yeah, defensively, for sure. And just a quick one on Daniel Jones, because I think he's underrated, Ose. I think he is. I think everyone's quick to write him off. And you look around, you're sure if you're going to get a Justin Herbert kind of, or even a Justin Fields kind of player, right? Or, you know, if you get Trevor Lawrence, sure, but I don't think you're going to, then maybe that's an upgrade. But then the flip side, why would you trade in at the moment Daniel Jones, or at least not give him another year for a kind of Dalton level, you know, player that I guess would be the realistic option for them, right?
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense. So you're correct. I think with a team like that, you're almost stuck for a little while, you know, because you know you can have better play at that position. Even though I think Dan is a good quarterback, and I think he's going to be a very good quarterback, I think right now you can have better play at that position.
Yeah.
But then if you don't play well enough, but you're always going to be good enough, so you're on like 5-11, 6-10. So you never can get like the Trevor Lawrences or the Justin Fields, like you said.
Mm.
So he's better than the Andy Daltons, but he's not as good as the Trevor Lawrences.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean? So you're kind of like stuck in that middle ground for like a couple of years until it goes one way or the other.
Yeah. It's the Blake Bortles effect, I think is what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk Colts Raiders. Let's start with Derek Carr. I know how much you love quarterbacks, so that's why I want to talk so much about him. But Derek Carr, it feels like he, there's a bit of a rehabilitation with Carr. Everyone, again, had written him off far too quick. It seemed even that Gruden didn't really rate him, right? Doesn't really buy him. Yeah. But it looks like he's turned the corner, right?
Yeah, it seems so. This year is his best year in forever. And I think when you think about it, John Gruden, this is a guy specifically brought in and known as a quarterback whisperer. Mm. So if there was anybody that was going to be able to turn around Derek Carr, get him playing to his previous levels, it was going to be John Gruden. Mm. People had written him off. Gruden brought in Mariota, a guy who he really, you know, liked and thought maybe he was going to be able to compete at a high level with Carr. But it just didn't happen because Carr is a very talented football player and he has very good leadership skills. Mm. And this year he seems to be putting everything together. He's had a couple of rough games. You know, that last game against Atlanta was ridiculous. Yeah. But I think he's shown that he can be the quarterback of the future there.
I know you love your movies, though. So we've talked about that a fair bit. And Gruden increasingly reminds me of Tony D'Amato in Any Given Sunday. I've made that connection.
The
ways that he's talking to Carr sometimes, it's just like how Pacino talks to Jamie Foxx. Like, you can't hear him. It really reminds me of that. He's that era as well. I think it's his old school. Are you buying the Colts? Because defensively, they're legit, right? But they don't seem to... Given what they've done this season, and again, they're like almost every team has had at least one. You mentioned the Raiders, absolutely tanking it. Every team has had at least one of those, and you know, a few have had more than one. The Colts seem to be one of those teams where they're pretty consistent most of the time, yet no one's buying them as a serious Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, because I think offensively they struggle too much. You don't really know what their identity is. Philip Rivers, he can be great one day. The next day, he looks terrible. Mm. Their running game is inconsistent. The one strength they do have on that football team is that offensive line. I'm talking about as far as offense.
Yeah, yeah.
Very strong on the offensive line. And then defensively, they play well. So I feel like it all comes down to people's lack of belief in the quarterback, Philip Rivers.
Yeah.
They don't think he's going to be able to take them, you know, across that hump. And so people are writing the Colts off a little bit, and rightfully so.
Yeah, and I guess it's probably Rivers' last year. I mean, he signed a one-year deal, right? So it's kind of almost feels like a win or bust. It'd be interesting to see what they do at quarterback next season, right? Because the rest of the pieces will still be there. It feels like they need to win. It's a big must-win game for the Colts as well. Last one I want to ask you about, probably the biggest game of the weekend, is Steelers Bills, because I know that you're passionate about the Steelers. I was surprised, though. So I've got to say, I was surprised to hear you being so skeptical of the Steelers. And for the benefit of those listening who haven't heard your take on it, you're not buying very particular take, but you're not buying them at all. You think they're the fool's gold, right? The emperor's new clothes.
100%. And this has nothing to do with that coach. And I feel like Mike Tomlin is the best coach in the NFL. Him and Bill Belichick, to me, 1A and 1B. This man, 14 years, 500 or better. That doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
But I think when I look at that football team, it's just missing, like, true dynamism at the offensive, you know, skill position. I know Claypool's a good player, but he's not, like, a dominant football player, if you understand what I mean. Juju Smith-Schuster, number two, number three receiver. Their running game is inconsistent. The offensive line is okay. Big Ben is okay. So they've been winning games primarily based on the way their defense has been playing. And then offensively, you know, they show up when they need to. Mm. So when I look at them, I'm like, it just doesn't look to me like a Kansas City, you know, or New Orleans when Drew Brees was back there. They don't look to me like they're that. And I feel like they're a team that could be beat by anybody. And Washington just went up there and beat them. So.
Sure.
That's just what I saw when I looked at them.
You know, I look at that and I hear that. I guess I look at teams and, hey, you were part of one, right? The defense was the core of that team. And that's not a slight on the offense, right? But it was a team that was built on that, right? And there are so many examples of that. The Broncos with Manning, right? And going back to the Ravens with Trent Dilfer, you know, the Ray Lewis, Ed Reed kind of era. That are defense, the Seahawks, right? You know, that are defense first, and you just have to be, as you said, capable enough. Steelers are that, aren't they? They're and maybe more so because they've got a Roethlisberger who I always back the vet quarterback in a serious playoff situation, right? He's been there, done it, and seen it all.
Yep. I think what I'm saying is, I don't think that the Steelers defensively are that dominant.
Right. Right.
I think that's what I'm alluding to, because you're 100% right. There have been defensive-led teams that can get you all the way there. Even when Denver did it with Manning, you had DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller. They were just
great
terrorizing quarterbacks, especially towards the end. The loss of Bud Dupree to T.J. Watt, that is going to be a monumental hole to fill because that guy was a fantastic football player.
Yeah.
But they just weren't, you know, game teams that they were supposed to be beating handily, they kind of were like, oh, we're humming it, you know? And I was like, nah, this isn't, this can't continue. You know what I mean?
It's a bit, it's a bit unfair to put you and Strahan and Tuck, and then the Ray Lewis Ravens. It's probably not a fair, it's not a fair balance there. But I feel that if they, you know, you mentioned the Chiefs, and if that is the AFC Championship game, I see them maybe out of all of the teams in the AFC, maybe the Raiders notwithstanding, that that can go toe to toe offensively when it's chiming. I mean, you look the defeat the other day; they dropped like I don't know how many 11, 12 balls, catchable balls. Yeah. I think. It's a big ask, and it's a big ask to go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs offensively. But who else in the AFC really can? Raiders on their day can, but I mean, I don't know, they'd be back in the Colts, you're back in the Bills to do that. I'm just not sure.
I wouldn't back the Bills. I wouldn't back the Colts. I wouldn't back anybody besides, oddly enough, and I don't even know if this team is going to make the playoffs. I would back Tennessee against Kansas City. I would. Because you know how they like to say in boxing, styles make fights? Mm-hmm. That Tennessee team, the way they play, if they get you on the right day, man, you're in big trouble. You know what I mean? Because they're a very physical football team. Mm. And they just pound you with Henry, hitting you over the top with the play action pass.
Yeah.
The way they play, you know, they're trying to bloody your nose. And so if you catch the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs when it takes off for one game, if I'm going to pick a team in the AFC, I would pick Tennessee to be the ones that could be able to knock them off. And that's a team that might not make it into the playoffs.
It's a great shout. You know, it's a great shout. And also, the time of possession, they can just eat that clock up and keep Mahomes off the field, right? That is 101, how to beat Mahomes. Keep him off the field that he can't beat you. Love that. Hey, Os, it has been great catching up, man. It has been too long. But I appreciate you dropping by. When are we going to – I'm worried about us playing five-a-side together. You know why? Because you know, I kind of have a comfort zone with five-a-side. As you know, I'm a keeper, right?
Yeah.
Our listeners know I'm a keeper because I remind them every 5 minutes. And I like kind of five, six-a-side, short form, fast pace. I'm worried I'm going to come to one of your games and I'm going to be like, whoa, you tell me it was nine-a-side and goals are really big. And suddenly I'm not my comfort zone. So I'm going to have to get you down to one of my regular games first. And then,
I got you, man. I got you. I don't mind. I'll turn up.
Deal. We're going to do that. Look after yourself, man. If we don't speak before, have a fantastic Christmas, man. And appreciate you dropping by. Always appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Nat. Take care.
Legendary stuff from a bona fide legend. Looking forward to catching up with the big man very, very soon. We'll check in with Ben Isaac shortly. Before we do, though, let's get you set for your weekend fantasy. Here's Marley with his fantasy capsule.
Yes, guys, that's right. I'm back with my fantasy picks for week 14, which means it's playoff time in fantasy leagues everywhere. It has been a tough old slog this season with COVID and injuries, so congratulations. If you are listening with vested interest and have made it to the playoffs, well done. My starter, I'm coming straight out the gate with a massive gamble. Sammy Watkins, wide receiver for the Chiefs. I have a feeling that Brian Flores will double Hill and double Kelsey in that very Patriots-esque way of saying someone else is going to have to do it. And I have a feeling Watkins can be that man. I know he's a third option. I know he's been injured this season. I know the Dolphins defense is good, but sometimes you gotta take a gamble, and he would be a smart player to have as your wide receiver slash running back option pick this week. And for my sit-em, I'm gonna go with Devin Singletary. The Bills have struggled to run the ball well all season, which does not bode well when the Steelers are coming to town. It's all going to be about Josh Allen in that fixture. We've seen the Bills double down before in terms of going all out pass against the Seahawks when it's needed to win. I can't see Singletary having many carries or yards put him on the bench. And for defense, I'm going to go with the Giants. And now 4 or 5 weeks ago, picking the Giants D against the Cardinals would have been fantasy suicide. But I promise this is more than an OC tribute pick. This is a team on the ascension against a team in decline. Murray's shoulder is clearly not 100%. And when teams have kept him in the pocket lately, there's been signs of struggle. The Giants will do exactly that. And if they can do a number on Russ, they can do a number on Kyler.
Fine work from him. We'll roll that out on social as well. Our social channels, incidentally, at the NC Shows, if you didn't know that by now. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Go give us a follow. Big shout out to all of you leaving reviews on all the different pod platforms. Really appreciate that. A lot of you doing that on iTunes recently. Massively appreciate it. Just taking the time out to write reviews on the show and let us know how much you're enjoying it. We massively appreciate that. It goes a long way because we really appreciate you and taking time to do that. Massive respect for that. So thank you. Big thanks from all of us. Let's get down to more NFL chat now. And welcome back to the show, one of our all-pro residents, Mr. Ben Isaacs. Ben, good to have you back, man. We're going to quick pick all the other games that we haven't covered with OC. We'll get into that in a minute. Some news as well. Before we get to any of it, we did radio together on Sunday. We discovered our shared love of the percentage chance of winning function on the ESPN. And hey, look, we're company men, right?
Oh, yeah.
And other sites as well. I become obsessed with it. And particularly since Sunday's show, I can't think about anything else.
Well, yeah. And there was just a whole heap of games where that win percentage fluctuated like crazy in the final 5 minutes of the game. You know, at one point the Bears were kind of 90% chance to win, and within 30 seconds the Lions were 90%. It's crazy how much it can kind of go between the two. It's sort of a sensible indicator, but the fact that, you know, when we saw that the Bears had a good return, Cordell Patterson returned the opening kickoff to about halfway, and instantly the Bears had like a 70% chance of winning. Like, it was like, these Lions, they're out
within,
of it now.
Within seconds of the game starting. I want to know how, we should know, because I'm not saying it's unique to ESPN. I know other websites have it as well, but we were particularly, because we are company men, obviously we have the ESPN site up and running. I want to know how it's put together. Is it an algorithm? Is there a room full of people in Bristol, Connecticut working on it? I kind of want to know.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that they have a big room full of scientists, the NFL's top boffins for each game, and they're running every numbers, but they've got like kind of the world's biggest computers, and they're constantly typing away, because I think it must take into account the team's records, because there was one game where it was a kickoff, and it was a touchback, and the favorite, it had it down, even though they were the team that kicked off, so they didn't even have the ball at this point. They gave them something like a 65% chance of winning, so they must weight it to the favorites. But it's a lot of fun when you can see the graph, because certain games might go kind of a little bit up, a little bit down, a little bit up, a little bit down, and some will just spike to the top, shoot to the bottom, and those are the games that are going to give someone a heart attack.
I love this idea, as you say, of a room full of people, maybe floors. You know, those kind of shadowy organizations that you see in films that,
you
know, latterly are creating thousands upon thousands of fake social media accounts that are spewing out false information into the world. And that's kind of what I like. Just one of those kind of complexes of 16 floors of people with machines and paper being handed to each other, and we're not quite sure what's going on. There's knowing nods and lots of tapping.
I'd like to think that there are all these different rival organizations figuring out their own win percentages, and it's a bit like with all the companies trying to be the first one to get the COVID vaccine out. They want to be the first ones to say, right, okay, we're calling it. The Lions are now 90.4%.
64.8% of the Lions after that three and out. Well, speaking of that, the Jets' percentage chance must have kind of flip-flopped. And of course, after that ridiculous call by Greg Williams to blitz Derek Carr, and we all know what happened and how that played out, they pulled the cord. It was no surprise in some respects, but at the same, I mean, there had to be a fall guy, I guess. But when you consider how woeful and dysfunctional this Jets season has been, it seems to be very odd timing. And of course, as many people are pointing out, Ben, if that decision turns out to cement their number one overall spot and Trevor Lawrence, then it will be a move of genius. They should be putting a statue up of Greg Williams.
Yeah. They should have been, you know, Greg Triple G Williams. They should have given him just anything he wanted at that point.
Right.
Because it helps him in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. The thing is, that was perhaps the Jets' best defensive performance of the season. Mm. And they did let themselves down on that play massively. And Greg Williams is a very successful and very experienced defensive coordinator. This isn't kind of like a new guy's lapse. It was incredible how badly that play was schemed out and how much of the field was left open for the Raiders. And you're right, there's always going to be a fall guy, but there was no chance that Greg Williams was going to be on that staff next season anyway. There is no chance that anyone on that coaching staff will be there next season. It will be an entire clean sweep. And the idea that they think, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll appease the fans by getting rid of Greg Williams, like the idea that Jets
3 weeks
be like,
before the end of the season.
Yeah, like, oh, now things are going to be okay. We know that the problem starts with Adam Gase. It is a completely dysfunctional coaching staff, and I get why they got rid of Greg Williams, but the team has been atrocious. That was not a bad performance by the Jets. It was a bad play, but you could have fired any coach after any Jets game this season. It's totally arbitrary. I feel a little bit sorry for Greg, but you know, he's gone and Trevor Lawrence will be coming in and we'll have new coaches to deal with.
Do you know what I think he and possibly Adam Gase should have done in the post-game presses was really telegraph it. It just kind of reeled a big wink. I don't know why we called that play. You know, just trying to style it out.
It's like, terrible that we're still winless.
Like Randy Bullock when he styled out, oh, my hamstring's gone when he missed the field goal. That's the kind of thing he should have. Just wing it. Just blag it.
It just shows how the lack of savvy that the likes of Adam Gase have, because you know, they should have just gone with it. Just lean into it. Mm. We were all thinking it at the time that to lose on that sort of play, to perform like that in the final play, there had to be a reason. They must have known. At one time, they thought Jacksonville might win. So like, oh, we can win a game and we'll be fine. Mm. Once it was clear that, you know, Jacksonville were not necessarily going to win that game, they had to lose.
It reminded me so much of the old, for all your old school Americanish listeners out there, the old Jimmy Garoppolo shtick we used to do when I think Jimmy might lose on Sunday. Jimmy Garoppolo's owned by essentially a mob that all owns a stake in Jimmy Garoppolo. I think Jimmy might lose. No, you know, I mean, it's going to be a tough game, that's for sure. No, you don't understand. Jimmy's going to lose on Sunday. It's the same thing. I'm certain it will come out in the watch. Greg Williams has taken some kind of well, anyway, let's move on before I say that I regret. Right, lots of games to get into. Let's start with the Bears, Texans, your Bears, of course. So I thought only right and proper we start with them, because their season's over now, isn't it? The Bears, I mean, they're in such free fall, there's no realistic chance of a rebound, or is there? Is the defense good enough to get them back in contention?
I mean, you know, technically they are still in the hunt, and that seventh spot in the NFC is still sort of up for grabs, but the team is in free fall. And not just because they've lost so many games in a row, because they've just been getting steadily worse. They don't know what they're doing at quarterback. The play calling has been terrible, but say what you want about the Bears, because in a pandemic, they've done a lot for safety. Look at the way that Allen Robinson practiced social distancing by staying 1 yard away from the first down marker, going out of bounds a yard short on a crucial conversion attempt in the final minute. Or the way members of the defense kept their distance from Matt Stafford in the final quarter. They were so safe. They've encouraged everyone watching to wear a mask, but it needs to be over your eyes. It's the only safe way, because there is no vaccine for Bears football this year. We'll get a cure in January, when Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, and Ted Phillips hopefully fired. But until then, the mask is the only safe way. Over your eyes. Please, anybody, if you're not a Bears or Texans fan, don't watch this game. Even if you are a Bears or Texans fan, you probably shouldn't watch this game. Having said that, the Bears did enough against Detroit to win. And Detroit are better than Houston. So I'm going to say the Bears will win because Houston have looked bad. The Bears have looked bad, but I don't think the Bears are quite as dysfunctional on the field as Houston are. And with so many players gone, I think the Bears have to have the advantage. It won't make a difference. You know, it'll bump them. It'll bump the Bears further back in the draft order, but I think they'll get the win.
Two quick questions on this. I hear all of that with the Bears, and you are more qualified than most being an NFL journalist and a Bears fan, right? So you combine the two, the amount of Bears, the detail with which you watch them, right? So I kind of accept all of that. And it sounds as well you're really looking forward to Black Monday because already talked about two coaches being fired and we've been going 5 minutes. What do you do at quarterback next year? I mean, is it basically Foles and Trubisky both out of there?
Well, Trubisky will definitely be out because he will be out of contract. And it's hard to imagine now at this point, anything happening that would make them re-up that contract. There was the chance that Trubisky didn't play too badly against Detroit, but of course he gave up that costly fumble. If they'd won that game and then they beat Houston, which is very realistic, they've also got Jacksonville coming up. You might look and say, well, you know, Trubisky won three games. Maybe you keep him for 1 year and see what happens with a new coach and bring someone else on. I now think it's very unrealistic. Foles is tied up. Foles could well be there next season. I think they will draft a quarterback because it is not going to be a productive offseason for anyone who's trying to bring in a free agent quarterback. The market is not going to be good. Mm. And I'm sure that we'll get onto Carson Wentz soon enough. The Bears need to draft a quarterback. Mm. They need then a coach who can develop that quarterback. It would be ideal if Nick Foles can improve. I mean, we know where we are with Nick Foles. The Nick Foles who won the Super Bowl with the Eagles is not the real Nick Foles. Everything else is the real Nick Foles. I'm sorry, Eagles fans. I know that you defend him with such vigor, it's almost frightening. But that he caught lightning in the bottle, and that was much more to do with the players around him than anything else. Mm. Nick Foles is an incredibly average player and a backup quarterback. If he could improve a little bit and have a rookie sit behind him and learn, that would be the best case scenario for next season. But
because that's realistically the level you're going to be drafting at, right? You're not going to get likely to get a ready-made starter unless you get lucky. The other thing I was going to ask on this game, and then we got a lot to rattle through, is just on Deshaun Watson, maybe not so much ask as point out how well he's playing. I mean, they were a misstep away from beating the Colts last week without Will Fuller, which I think would have, given the role they've been on, put them back in some kind of contentious playoff, you know, wild card race. I think that defeat has put a fork in him. But I don't think we should be underestimating just how well behind that offensive line, which is getting progressively better, but nevertheless, how well Deshaun Watson is playing in a really, really dysfunctional environment. I mean, heavyweight stuff from him. And I hope that the Texans are able to re-up to the degree where he goes back into, or the team becomes a contender again, and he goes back into that level of organization, because he's too good to be frittered away like this.
Yeah, no quarterback has done more with less in the NFL this season than Deshaun Watson.
Agreed. Okay, on to Pats Rams. I mean, the Pats are one of those cluster of teams, and I guess you could argue both of these teams are within this group that are hard to completely work out. There are certain teams we know what they're about. They're either good or bad, right? And then there are a handful of teams that are week to week, I change my opinion on them, right? Certainly as far as we get closer to the postseason, as far as their potential is concerned. We know the Patriots are short stacked and ultimately a weak roster, but as Belichick is proving, and McDaniels to a degree as well, they are extraordinary in terms of what they're being able to do because of their coaching acumen with a limited collection of players. The Rams just seem to lurch from exceptional to mediocre, although it's interesting to note that they are 8-1 when Goff has a quarterback rating above 75, 0-3 below 75. Now, I know that most of the time your record's going to be weaker if your quarterback rating or your quarterback's rating drops below a certain number, but this is the book on them, right? If Goff is confused, if Goff is out of sync, if Goff is struggling, they're really bad. If Goff is calm, composed, given time, they are amongst the top five teams in the NFL. So is this one of those games, because of what Belichick's done to quarterbacks like Goff once again this season, because it's what he's done to Goff historically, is it another game where you think, actually, I reckon this will be, despite the mismatch in terms of ability, a Patriots upset.
Well, you know, the Patriots' performance on Sunday was absolutely outstanding. And on your radio show, I actually picked the Chargers. Mm. I thought the Chargers were going to sneak it. I thought the Pats would do a letdown. Yeah. And why I thought a Bill Belichick coach team would have a letdown, I don't know. That's on me. The Rams are different, though. The Rams are not the Chargers. And I think there's a real talent gap between the Patriots and the Chargers. Now, obviously, the Patriots have Bill Belichick, but the Rams are the hardest team in the league to pass the ball on and one of the hardest to run against. I don't think the Patriots will be able to put up enough points for Goff to not be able to win the game for them. Yeah. Goff won't need to be outstanding.
Well, and their ground game's moving as well now. It's starting to look real. It's a good point you make, because the Patriots, we talked about this on the Monday show with Greg Brady, as opposed to Tom, who often comes on the Monday show. We were talking about you look at a score like that, and then you look at the lack of productivity once again from Cam with his arm, and it's extraordinary, a 45-zip win. And admittedly, there is more to Cam's game than that, right? Which we know, and it's not to be underestimated. But he threw for less than 100 yards repeatedly, and they're still winning games.
Yeah, it looks like it was the sort of game where you look at the box score and you're expecting to see 350 to 400 yards passing and four passing touchdowns. Maybe he runs for one. And you look at the stats and you're like, oh, it was that sort of game. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I was so excited for Cam in this offense this season. And it has not really clicked. It has not really worked. A lot of people felt that Cam would not fit within the organization because of his personality. That has not proven to be the case.
It quite is the opposite, right?
Exactly. It has simply been he's not been able to click on the field. Mm. Everything within the building is fine. It's just in games, he's not been able to do the Cam things that we used to see in the past. That's not really a surprise. And I don't know what they're going to do next season. The quarterback situation in New England is one of the most fascinating discussion points in the NFL.
They're going to get Mitch Trubisky.
Do you know what? A Mitch Trubisky or a Jimmy Garoppolo back to the Patriots,
back. I love that idea.
Or Carson Wentz to the Patriots. Would you have a doubt that Bill Belichick could improve any of those quarterbacks? Because I don't. I'm not saying he can turn them into a Super Bowl champion, but he could improve any one of those quarterbacks. So
it's one you haven't thought of. I love the idea of Garoppolo. What about Brady goes back for one last dance? For one last dance.
We can't see that. We can't see that.
I bring a tear to my eye.
So I am gonna go Rams on this one. I'm betting against Belichick for the second week in a row.
Yeah.
Lord help me.
More fool you. No, I think I'm with you. I think I agree. I think you nailed it. The defense is gonna stifle the Patriots to too significant a degree. They're just not gonna be able to keep up. Titans Jags is interesting because the Titans, of course, my God, one of the strangest performances I think we've seen in recent memory, that first half performance. And yet at the same time, they rallied. They got a lot going in the second half on both sides of the ball. We have to point out how they limited the Browns to next to nothing, really. And yeah, okay, we were doing the game together. The Browns were already checked out by that point because no one was catching him. But nevertheless, they were trending upwards and ending it in the right way. And they're going to need a big win, or at least a convincing performance, and ideally a big win to settle those doubters who were stunned at the way they were blown apart by Cleveland in the first half. I don't think there is any way that this Titans team, from everything that we've seen since Mike Vrabel took over, even when there was much less talent there, when they were certainly far from dominating games in the way that they have done more recently, they've always been, by and large, incredibly efficiently coached. I think it was a kind of period early doors with Vrabel when already the overreactors had their knives out saying, oh, you know, made this me. A young head coach made the odd mistake. But they have been, from very early on in his tenure, super organized and together in the way that McDermott's Bills are. You know, there is just a certain collection of coaches that, if nothing else, is going to keep the Flores as well, you can argue, really, with what he's done with Miami, right? I can't see the Titans coming out here, particularly against the Jags, and being anything but on it.
No, I joked on the show, I'd love to be a fly on the wall when Vrabel makes the team watch that first half performance against the Browns, because it would be absolutely terrifying. He will hit the roof. He simply won't let something like that happen again. It was such a weird game.
Yeah.
And the Titans now have to just figure things out and fast. Now, if you just looked at the Jags record, you think this was perfect for Tennessee, just what the doctor ordered, right? Because, you know, they've not won a lot of games in Jacksonville. But what we do know is that Jacksonville have become a really tough out. You know, and one of the best predictors for success is how you did in close games the previous season. So if your wins are usually close, it's likely you'll win fewer games the following season. If you lose a lot of close games, your record next year should be better. So Jags fans should feel optimistic about 2021 if they can find a quarterback. We seem to be talking a lot about teams that don't have quarterbacks. Now, having said all that positive stuff about Jacksonville, I'm expecting the Titans to bounce back here, in part because they just have to, but also because the Jags have struggled defending the run. And Derrick Henry, I can't imagine any circumstances where the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have been soft against the run, are going to stop an angry Derrick Henry on Sunday. So I think the Titans will ride Derrick Henry all the way to a very, very comfortable win that will set the Titans back on course, because we know they're a playoff team. They've just got to get their act together, find form in December, and I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, me too. I like the Titans all the way here, and I think they're going to be serious when it comes to the playoffs. I'm a big fan of Vrabel. You might have gathered, Ben. You might have gathered that. Right. We've got to rattle through the others. We've got a lot of ground to cover. So let's go Vikings-Bucks. The Vikings are making the playoffs, aren't they?
It's very possible. I mean, they are more talented than their early season record suggested, but I felt they had too big a hole to make it to the postseason. That's no longer true. Much like the Titans, they've got to get things figured out now, because it's one thing being 500, but you're going to need to be over 500 to feel even remotely comfortable. So the Bucks have the same position. They've got to sort things out, because you want to be the top wildcard team in the NFC, because then you'll play the NFC East winners, which is practically going to be a bye.
Well, we say that, but carry on. But yeah. That narrative's changing.
The Bucks clearly aren't good enough to finish above the Saints. And if they lose this game, their grip on a wild card spot becomes considerably weaker.
Now, Ben, I know you're a huge fan of our Edge Rush show, which me and producer Ollie do.
Oh, yeah.
Drop every Saturday, right? Producer Ollie, because he's all about the diligence and the prep, right? There's never a minute goes by, barely a minute goes by, when he isn't thinking about the show, thinking about what he's going to talk about. Sent me a many WhatsApp messages earlier on, including our Edge Rush Moneyline Treble, which is something we drop. We think three teams that are going to win straight up, right?
Yeah.
He's got Tampa Bay in there. He's confident enough about Tampa Bay winning this game that he wants to put it in our Edge Rush Betfred Moneyline Treble of the week.
Consider my eyebrows raised on that. I don't pick against Brady when the chips are down. So
you pick against producer Ollie either.
You don't pick against Tom Brady. You don't pick against producer Ollie. I think the Bucks will win this because they are better than the Vikings. But if the Bucks don't, their season is going to fall apart.
I agree. I put them in that box of teams, which I just change my opinion on them week on week. They are just baffling at the moment. But I think all is not lost there. I wonder if the Chiefs, if the Bucks rather, much like the Patriots are the prototype, the gold standard for this, but I wonder if they're one of those teams that in the final, we were talking to Shane Vereen, let's name drop, right? Shane Vereen was on our radio show last week, and Vereen, Super Bowl winner, been there, done it, worked with Belichick, emphasized the point that it's the last few weeks of the season when serious stuff gets done. And Patriots teams historically have got better and better as the season have gone on. I wonder if the Bucks are one of those teams because of that change, all that talent around. There's a lot of talent still on both sides of the ball. I do like the balance there. I wonder if they are going to be one of those teams that starts to get back in rhythm at the right time.
Yeah, I'd much rather play them in September, October, November than December or January.
Right, agreed. I think counting them out at the moment is folly. Chiefs, Finns. Of course, this brings, amongst other things, Brian Flores back in the mix, who was amongst the architects as a lieutenant of Belichick at the time of the AFC Championship win for the Patriots a few years back when, seemingly Belichick is one of the few head coaches to have worked out a way of stifling Mahomes, and Flores was a key part of that game plan. Tyreek Hill, I remember in particular, was was locked down in the game. Although if memory serves, Sammy Watkins went off. So that's, you know, therein lies the problem with the Chiefs, right? If you shut down one of their assets, another one will go off. I think it is quite clearly a heavily favored Chiefs going into Miami, but it does make it intriguing, that particular aspect, nevertheless, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Dolphins can realistically beat anybody right now because of that defense.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game worth talking about. This is an unmissable game to watch and definitely one to be talking about. And you wouldn't have thought that back in September, right, that here we'd be at this point of the season saying what a significant game this is for both teams, for them to show something. Now, the Dolphins have got four tough games to close out the season. After this one, it's the Patriots, the Raiders, and the Bills. Mm. Will they make life hard for Mahomes this week? Yes. Will they beat them this week? No. Mm. But it will be close, and the Dolphins are absolutely for real. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I don't think the Dolphins' defense is built to have blowouts, even against the Chiefs. And this feels like the sort of game where, in 5 years' time, we'll look back and say, oh, remember that really good regular season game between the Dolphins and Chiefs? Because now they play each other in the postseason every single year. These right. teams are both built for long-term success now. This is done. I don't think this is going to be a flash in the pan. Expect to see these teams play in January quite a lot. Make the most of this game. But I can't see past the Chiefs.
I love that. I think that's absolutely right. They will be slugging it out in years to come in the postseason. Two heavyweight franchises in terms of future projection. I'm a little bit worried about Tua because I think he will deliver ultimately. But I think people are getting a little bit carried away with Tua. It strikes me, and he's such a great story, and he's such an exciting quarterback. And I'm not being facetious here. We like watching a Southpaw player, right? And
yeah.
Like this Dolphin side finally contending again, willing him. He's one of those players, I think, that at times the comms and other analysts are willing him to do so well and maybe overstating just how effective he's been. Look, he's been okay. He's been good at times, but I think let's not get carried away yet with Tua and the four-game sample size that we've had. All right, Broncos-Panthers. I'd certainly rather have Tua than Drew Lock. What do we want to say about this game?
Oh, man. Well, I think we just got to say Drew Lock. I don't like Drew Lock as an NFL starter. Never did. Didn't trust his decision-making or accuracy coming out of college. He just got a big arm. Admittedly, he didn't end up in a great spot in Denver because it feels like the Broncos have been rebuilding for like forever, it seems. But they've got some talent on offense. So they need a quarterback fits what they want to do. And I don't think Drew Lock fits there. The Panthers, meanwhile, without McCaffrey, they're unwatchable most of the time. I mean, they had a good start to the season. I remember being on this show when the Panthers were playing the Bears, and it seemed like everyone was picking the Panthers. Yeah. And I understood why people had doubts about the Bears, but I went back and I watched everything I could of the Panthers, and I thought, this team is just utter dreck. I know they're winning games, but they were not good. And then, lo and behold, after that Bears game, they just stopped winning games. Mm. They'd fluked some wins before that. This is not a good team without Christian McCaffrey. There is not enough balance there. I like Teddy Bridgewater. I really do. I've been disappointed in him this season. I thought he was going to be better than he has been. However, he's a very stable and reliable quarterback. And although they've only won like one game in the past 60 days, I think they will beat the Broncos. Teddy will beat Drew Lock in a game that does not register outside those two fan bases.
UK Panthers fans, Ben is on Twitter at Tweets from Ben.
Hey.
And he wants to hear from you.
I do. Honestly, you know, come at me on that.
well, it's a fair point. I think a lot of people are drinking the Rule-Aid. Hey. You see what I did there? That just came straight out of my head. I mean, that was gold. I felt it was. But you know, and I get it. You know, this is an organization that is probably trending in the right direction for sure. And there have been a fair amount of positives. But yeah, much as I will watch any kind of NFL game, whenever it's on, wherever it's on, I don't care. Other people are like, who's going to watch this? And back in the day when people would slag off the games we were getting in London, no one's going to watch that. It's like, this is amazing. Broncos Panthers at the moment, I will still be interested in watch it, but it is maybe the weakest game on the slate in terms of appeal this week anyway. Cowboys Bengals.
Tough competition.
Maybe I spoke too soon. Cowboys, Bengals. Right, let's be quick because we got to rattle through the others, Ben. I thought the Cowboys would play the Ravens harder, I have to say. And again, chatting to producer Ollie, as we often do about lines, in the end, I felt that the Ravens were going to win comfortably. I like the over in that game as well. And both of those came out. But particularly the way the game started too, I thought, okay, here we go. Here we go. And the Gallup touchdown, I thought, right, they're gonna go toe-to-toe and at least make it more competitive than they ultimately did.
Yeah, it was disappointing. And I've got quite a bit of faith in Andy Dalton just because he is reliable. You know, he wasn't in the greatest position in the Bengals organization. And they talk about the fact that he didn't win playoff games. He played playoff games. You know, a lot of organizations would have been pleased with the number of playoff games that they got to play. The Cowboys, we know they're a mess right now. We know why they're a mess. It's all about Dak Prescott. The issues go deeper, but they should be better than they are. The Bengals were, again, trending up before Joe Burrow's devastating injury. They haven't been the same since. And that's why in this game, I've got to go with the Cowboys because Andy Dalton, the Andy Dalton factor.
Yeah,
you know?
The Dalton factor is often a key aspect of NFL. The Dalton line actually has been a significant thing for a long time. Yeah. Again, maybe I spoke too soon. The Cowboys win this. They're still in the mix, incidentally. Jets, Seahawks next. The Seahawks in a bit of bother. There's only one quarterback that's been sacked more than Carson Wentz since week 10. 16 times Russell Wilson has been sacked since week 10.
That's bad.
This is the, you know, everyone's been fixated on the Seattle defense is terrible all season long. There are other problems with this team. And if anything, the defense is starting to level up a bit. Certainly the pass rush, you know, most of the time in recent weeks has been a lot more effective than it has been for much of the season. So trending the right way. The offensive line and the protection is maybe now amongst their biggest problems.
Yeah, I'm expecting a comfortable Seahawks win. This is ideal timing for Seattle because the Jets are such a mess.
Yeah.
But I think a win here just kind of papers over the cracks. Seattle have been maddening at times with the things they're getting wrong. And like you say, just not protecting their most important asset. And the defense was bad early in the season, but there's a lot of things going wrong there. They're going to make the playoffs, but they're going to need to significantly improve to make any impact in the playoffs. And going forward, they can't be doing this season after season. Something's got to get sorted. There's holes that need to be filled.
Okay, well, I think we're both going Seahawks. But yeah, as you say, it'll be a Pyrrhic victory, I think, for Seattle. And it's strange how the twists and turns of this season have knocked them out of any kind of serious contention now, where, you know, 4 weeks in, this is the danger with overreacting, Ben, as we always say, to a small sample size. Packers, Lions and Falcons, Chargers. A line on each, who's going to win and why?
The Packers are going to beat the Lions because the Lions have had their moments, but they're still not actually a good team. And Aaron Rodgers having a fantastic season, the most talented quarterback of his generation, even though the Packers have wasted him, frankly, with the talent they put around him. So I'm expecting the Packers to take another step towards locking up the second seed. Falcons, Chargers. I mean, if you're not a Falcons or Chargers fan, watching them can be fun because you know that even if they play well, they could build a lead and just implode. And that sort of mental weakness is down to coaching. I think the blowout against the Pats will have really knocked the Chargers. So I'm going with Atlanta.
Okay, Saints, Eagles. I mentioned Wilson second only to Carson Wentz in terms of sacks. Jalen Hurts, we saw a bit of last time out. Looks like he'll get the start. Looks like Carson's done in Philly. Talk us through, Ben, as our resident college expert, your prognosis, your upside for Jalen Hurts as an NFL quarterback.
I think he can be a solid NFL starter. He's good with his legs, almost as good as Lamar Jackson at times. He's not always as accurate as he needs to be. And that's something that he's got to work on because sometimes he would make the wrong decisions. He's got a really strong arm. He is an exemplary leader. Mm. Someone who at Alabama, he won so many games with them before he lost his job to Tua, basically, because of an injury. And Tua came in and you couldn't drop Tua. He went to Oklahoma, turned Oklahoma into national championship contender. He has been spectacular in college and he deserves to be an NFL starter. I think he can do really good things for the Eagles, but the problem is let's say he's great for the rest of the season, prove himself a worthy starter, and the Eagles are like, we've got our quarterback. The Eagles are going to be in cap hell because of Carson Wentz's contract. So they are going to struggle to put any sort of supporting cast around Jalen Hurts. So Jalen Hurts is going to struggle. And then the narrative will be, oh, Jalen Hurts wasn't that good in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that he'll be pretty much blameless in on that. Carson Wentz, the contract is crazy. The only way out of it is to trade him. But who's going to take on that contract? Unless they can find a GM out there who hasn't actually watched the NFL this year, they're not going to find a buyer. And frankly, as much as I like Jalen Hurts, he is a rookie and he's going to be coming up against this stingy Saints defense. I don't feel like he's got any chance against the Saints.
So and Carson Wentz is going to the New York Giants is what you're essentially...
Oh, boy. That would be funny.
Okay, two more for you. Ravens-Browns. The Browns could knock the Ravens out of the playoffs potentially with this win, right? I suppose that they've leveled it up a little bit more in terms of a wild card berth with the Dallas win, Baltimore. But, I mean, this would be a big blow if they went down. And given what we saw, Cleveland, the favorites, I haven't looked at the line actually on this game. Well, you answer that while I look that up. Because well, I wonder if Cleveland, presumably they are at home, right?
To me, it feels like the Browns have become one of the most reliable teams in the NFL this year, really. I mean, they feel more reliable than the Ravens. And like I said on Sunday night, I don't know what to read into the way Cleveland played in the second half against Tennessee. My gut feeling is the Titans are good and played well in the second half against the Browns team that correctly felt they had it in the bag rather than the Browns just, you know, imploding. But Baltimore might be the most disappointing team in football. But if you look at who's beaten them, the Chiefs, and the Steelers,
well,
no shame in that.
Let me call you out on that a minute because, I mean, COVID's obviously massively impacted, an injury collectively, but COVID impacted them hugely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't any caveats or reasons. It's just that I expected the Ravens to be challenging those top two seeds.
Right.
And they've lost to good teams. Like I say, the Chiefs, Steelers twice. They've lost to the Titans. They've lost to the Patriots. But they've beaten other teams who you'd expect them to win. Although they beat the Colts and they beat the Browns earlier in the season. But this is a different Browns team now. This Ravens team is good enough to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were in the NFC East, they'd be winning it by a mile.
Yeah.
But the Browns know how to win, and now they expect to win. And I expect them to beat Baltimore this week. That feels weird saying, but I expect them to beat Baltimore.
I don't know. I quite like the Ravens for a win here. They're sitting ninth seed at the moment, but of course it's super tight. The Colts currently at the time of recording 8-4, holding the seventh spot. So yeah, you'd think that if it drops the Ravens to 7-6, I think it might be curtains. But incidentally, they are narrow favorites for this on the road. Narrow road favorites. That it's virtually a pick 'em. All right, the Alex Smith Bowl wraps things up. Of course, Washington, San Francisco. Given the defeat the 49ers had when they were trending up, I think that is pretty much stuck a fork for the second time I've used that in this show in terms of their playoff ambition. And Washington, on the other hand, of course, at 5-7, same record as the 49ers, but the same record as the Giants, who currently hold the fourth seed on the tiebreaker. So a lot at stake for Washington here.
It's a really intriguing game. Washington are an interesting team to watch. They're building something, and you've got to have a heart of stone to not be interested in what Alex Smith is doing.
Right.
As for the 49ers, I was saying about, you know, kind of Deshaun Watson, you know, no quarterback has done more with less. I'm not sure from a coaching point of view that anyone's done more with less than Kyle Shanahan.
Agreed.
He's had so many injuries to deal with. He doesn't really have a quarterback that he can rely on. I've gone back and forth on this one when it came to picking it, but it's hard to get that Steelers win out of my head. So I'm going to have to go Washington as they keep their playoff hopes alive. I mean, they might win a division championship.
Yeah.
This is a team that could be in the playoffs. They'll cause someone a problem in the playoffs. They won't win a playoff game, I wouldn't thought, but they could cause the team a problem because the defense is pretty aggressive.
Yeah, I think it is a fair shout. And incidentally, on the 49ers, I mentioned this in passing to you, I think, in the studio on Sunday. Brandon Ayuk. Love Brandon Ayuk. I think he's one of my favorite rookies of the season. Really rate him. I don't think he's getting enough attention. Anyway, just looking at the playoff seedings, the Cowboys are 16th. So maybe I was being a little bit ambitious when I said they could still mathematically, they could still make the playoffs. There we go, Ben. We got it done. Fine work. At Tweets for Ben, of course, is where we can find you. Great to see you, man. Look after yourself. Enjoy the games.
Cheers. See you soon.
fine stuff from Ben. We will check in with him very, very soon. Appreciate OC as well as ever. Marley too, Andy, Tom, and the crew over on social media. We're back. Producer Ollie and I with the Edge Rush show. That drops Saturday morning into your podcatchers. And then we are back Monday for a look back at what I am certain is going to be a whirlwind Sunday once again. So we'll get you set for that. Make sure you join us. Subscribe. You know the drill. See you later.